Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
In the dark, I played my dream. Purple coats and flows like sweet streams. I'm the daddy, but the know-how seed. Great in the world like it's meant to be. I'm a coach of B.I.O.B. I'm the king. Back to love in everything. Bring a change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 454 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture Is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Well, good to be here with y'all on this, Thursday? Every day feels like Monday as of late, but it's all good. Glad to be here with all of y'all. If you're coming in on a live segment, hit that thumbs up so you can go ahead and tell YouTube to start suppressing us, because that's what they do. Yeah, no matter what, no matter what we're talking about, no matter the time, no matter whatever, they always cap us off on how many can actually watch live. But anyway, hit that thumbs up. Let others out there know what's going on. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. It's always capped off at the exact, almost like within five people of each other, always at the same number almost every single time. I don't think I've ever noticed that until you just said that.
That's no, funny. They do it. They do it every single time. But anyway, this episode is always brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. TPC will get you 5% off. Barbara O'Neill is going to be out there all 5 days speaking multiple times a day. And then also we got a bunch of backup dancers you're going to want to check out. Look, if you can't be there, I totally get it. Times are hard, but you need this information. That's why we have the online component. So at a major discount there, but you don't get the benefit of being there in person. But anyway, TPC will get you 5% off. Also, Nessus Hemp. Yeah, the best CBD out there. I use it every single day, twice a day, actually. Depending on the day, I might even take three. But anyway, 10% off with promo code PERMA. All right, before I get into it, I want to remind you once again, out there at the First Baptist Church of Marshall, North Carolina, they're going to have their summer celebration. That's going to be June 20th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Everybody's invited. And if you're one of those freakazoids running around Asheville, they might even chase some of them demons out of you. So, everybody's invited. So go out there, check it out. I think they're going to have a lot of giveaways, the whole nine yards. I'm going to try to make it out there myself. All right. So we'll just jump right into it. Farm news. Well, y'all, despite all the stuff they're doing in this world, guess what? We got peaches coming on trees that haven't had peaches before. We got blueberries blowing up on places they haven't been before. Is it a result of that device out there? I can't say for sure, but I'm seeing things I haven't seen before. Pollinators almost to an annoyance running around this place. It's pretty darn crazy how much is really going on. But anyway, peaches and blueberries, I imagine we'll be picking these guys here in about a week or so, which is pretty darn awesome, because up until now, we would have to go somewhere else to get all of our blueberries for the year. And I don't know that we're going to produce enough for us. Because we go through them like nothing you would ever believe. And so we go down and see Janet down at Cloud Nine Farm to go, you know, pick up what we can't get here. So anyway, it looks like we might be doggone close to being able to produce all we need. So some other things I got going on, folks. If you're considering this life, if you can't do the same task every single day, day in and day out, please consider something else, or maybe another area of this, because I'm here to tell you, this time of year, like right now, where I'm trying to get ahead of this silvergrass, I'm on a weed eater every single day. In fact, I'm going to jump on it as soon as I'm done this podcast. And then there's other things that might seem monotonous to regular everyday people out there. And that's, you know, moving your animals, or, you know, there are things that are just compulsory every single day when you do this job. So you got to consider that if you're one of the folks that are thinking about, I don't know, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. Look, if doing repetitive tasks get on your nerves, you might do what I do. I mean, it doesn't get on my nerves because I know what I'm producing when I do it. So it's always in my head that the work I'm doing is actually for a greater result. So anyway, you know, when I'm out there weed eating, I got to obviously have some kind of hearing protection. So I'm sitting there listening to a podcast. You may find another way to, you know, occupy your time when you have to do those kinds of tasks. But that's a good way for me to learn and to educate myself passively. Maybe I don't catch everything, but, you know, I catch a lot. You know, for example, I'm going through the course of Erwin LaCour, considered one of the, he has a website called Breath Hold Work. And he has it's quite an extensive course on how you can hold your static breath and what it does for you, the benefits of doing it. And some claim, and among them is Dr. Jack Cruz, claiming that this is by far the most superior breath work that you can do out there. So I'm listening to his courses. And then, of course, when I'm not on the weed eater, I go out and do the practical exercises. So it's things like that. You could be listening to an audiobook. I mean, maybe not spend all your time listening to Joe Rogan or somebody else, unless it's, you know, maybe it is something you want to do. But me personally, I choose to educate myself in something. I'm a lifelong learner and I'm an autodidact. So that's exactly, you know, what I usually use that time to do, or catch up on things that are going on in this world. Try not to do too much of that these days. I mean, good night, man. I mean, every single time you got something going on. So other things going on around here. Here's another little hack for you folks. Planting comfrey in your bare spots. I've talked about it before. Well, that's one of the areas. That's one of the things I'm doing right now. And some of the areas that are too steep, because we work in a very, very steep mountainous environment here. That's one of the things I'm doing. That's one of the hacks I'm doing over there. It's probably not going to be anything I go and dig up, but it's already in the pasture when the sheep come through. So you don't have to bring it to them. So if you have any bare spots in your pastures, y'all, that is an awesome way for your ruminants or any other thing you may be running out there. Chickens will partake. Believe me, they will absolutely wipe it out if they get the opportunity. So instead of having to bring it to them, have it in the pasture already. So if you have any bare spots out there, consider, you know, breaking up your comfrey and doing that. Just put out a video today on how to split your comfrey or how easy it is. And also an update on the chop and drop that I did last week. So you can go check that out. For the people that are wondering, yeah, we got bone sauce back in stock. It won't ship. So if you order, it won't ship probably until Saturday. I'm not sure, but anyway, we got it back in stock. And, so for the people that have been blowing me up, there you have it.
And people blowing me up about it. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we'll have some more of that, but folks, I'll be honest with you. I don't cut corners on this stuff. I don't water it down like other people might be doing if anybody's selling it. And then also I have a proprietary recipe that I invented that, you know, that works. It works exceedingly well. And I don't cut corners. And so if I have to wait a while before I get it out there, folks, you know the reasons why. I'm not going to have my name tied to some junk that isn't doing what I say it does or doesn't have the effect, because I wanted to make more money. Or folks, have you noticed prices of everything have gone up in this world, but our bone sauce hasn't, comfrey hasn't. And that I'm going to keep it that way as long as I possibly can. So we're eating the cost on that. And it's a pleasure for me to be able to do it. Honestly, as I say in the video, I want to make comfrey so ubiquitous that it's impossible to sell. That's exactly what I want to do, because it is that incredibly important. And then finally, I'll just, you know, I'm gonna take a modest bow, I suppose, on the prospective peace that we supposedly have in the Middle East. Now, is that gonna last? Is it gonna, you know, is this another rope-a-dope? Is this another lie? I mean, we've been told we had peace, or told that the war was over, what, almost 50 times already? So yeah. I'm waiting with bated breath. I don't know about you, son, but I'm wondering just how long this is gonna last before they get back at it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to last very long. But yeah, as far as my day, this morning I harvested about a bushel of onions, which was cool. I went out to the demonstration site to get a bunch of just to harvest what was ready to be harvested out there. There were a bunch of tomatoes that were ready, paste tomatoes. There were a bunch of onions that were ready. I think I even picked up some potatoes, some peppers, some banana peppers, and some cayennes as well. A bunch of jalapenos, got those planted. There's going to be a ton of figs on that tree over at the property this year. I'm excited about that. There's going to be a lot of freaking, lot of figs on there. And then tomorrow, or tonight, I guess it's supposed to come in tonight. We're supposed to get what, I guess, some storm or something like that. It's supposed to be a pretty big, decent-sized storm. We're supposed to get 2 inches of rain tomorrow. And also today, I did notice that, what is it, Old Texas Coot said 101 with the heat index of 117 in Central Texas Hill Country. Now, we had a severe heat warning today here in East Texas, but it felt no different than yesterday. Like, I think the humidity was about the same and the temperature was about the same, so I don't understand why there was a warning today, but there wasn't a warning yesterday. And then, like usual, the sun that we did get yesterday and today has always been, it's always dim. Even though you don't see a cloud in front of the sun, it's still dim. You don't get any bright sunny days or anything like that anymore. You just get like dimmed sun days. And yeah, that's the extent of our blue sunny days lately. But yeah, that's what's going on here. I got to figure out what I'm going to put in all the empty spots in the garden beds. I might just put in a cover crop for now, or I might try to fit more tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, or maybe even more sweet potatoes if anybody's selling those still. Or I could also do sweet corn. So I got some options. I just got to figure out which one I'm going with and fill in the holes in the gardens now.
Man, I'll tell you what, man, I would any day of the man, you could be having okra coming out of your eyeballs, man. There's nothing I love more. The most pickled thing in the world I love more than anything is pickled okra. Yeah. I don't even understand. Honestly, son, in these sandwich shops, I don't know why they're giving those regular flaccid limp dill pickles, man, when they could be sitting here giving out, you know, some, I mean, man, I mean, pickled okra is the shiznit, man. I don't know why they don't do pickled okra instead of pickles, man. I mean, just like regular pickles. They're always, I don't know, they're always not good. But, man, pickled okra, any day of the week, y'all. I mean, that is the best way. Yeah, you know, you got it in gumbo and stuff like that and jambalaya. But outside of that, I mean, fried, yeah, you can do that too. And, you know, depending on what you're frying it in, you may have some problems. But, man, pickled okra, man, is impossible to beat. I'll take it any day. Oh, and by the way, Nancy, thank you so much for the endorsement. Billy's Bone Sauce is the bomb. Haven't had a single deer on my property since I applied it around my garden. Well, thank you so much for that. Unfortunately, that device, that DPE-100X, Agriculture X, I mean, man, I'm telling you, son, it's calling in wildlife like nothing I've ever seen before. Oh, I mean, it is, it, and they said this would happen. So you got to ask you got to pick your poison. Okay, do I want chemtrails neutralized from the sky, or am I going to have to lay out a bunch more bone sauce because I got a bunch of deer running around this place? And like Jack Spearco always says, you know, if nothing else, man, you got a deer garden. You know, if they're in there wiping you out, I'll wipe them out. That's how it goes. I mean,
you know what's going to happen next, right? Guys better turn that fence on around the beehives because the bears are coming.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that, man. Yeah, it's like, you know, I was talking about the lady at Cloud Nine Farm, Janet. You know, she always says that, you know, there are two type of beekeepers in North Carolina. Those that have bear problems and those that don't know it yet. So, yeah, we've always had that fence around there. I think it's time to go ahead and kind of get that thing up to snuff again because, son, I ain't kidding. I'm hearing birds around here I've never heard before. I'm seeing pollinators like nothing I've ever seen before. And I'm seeing deer like your mom saw deer in plain sight, just walking out. I mean, doing stuff that they don't typically do, man. I mean, it is absolutely crazy. So you got to pick your poison. Personally, I'd rather, you know, have to put out a lot more bone sauce and, you know, do a lot of diversions for the deer than deal with this junk that's falling from the sky because it is, in fact, neutralizing it. So that's a good thing. Let's see here, son. I think there was a question in here.
Yeah, it's from Frankie122. Does the number of or diversity of mushrooms correlate with soil health?
Yeah, to a certain extent. It depends on what your mushroom is your fruiting body. You got mycelium that's going long before you ever see that mushroom. Okay, So as far as fungi, it depends on what it looks like under that microscope. There are things that William and I are looking for, and Michelle, we're looking for, you know, what is a septum? You know, does that equally spaced septum? You know, what's its diameter? I mean, not diameter, but what is its thickness? There's a number of other things. If you have good fungi, yeah, high diversity. It's the only place on Earth. I say this all the time, y'all. It's the only place on Earth where DEI actually works to a point.
Yeah.
And that's in your compost pile and in your soil. You want as much diversity as possible, but if it is not compatible with your area, believe me, it's going to be snuffed out. That's why when you buy compost from a place that is not in your region, son, what happens? What happens? You bought compost that came from Montana.
Well, if you bought compost, chances are it's already dead. But let's say we bought good compost from Montana and then brought it to Texas. A lot of those organisms are going to die just because this isn't the environment that they're used to. Now, as far as your mushrooms, I'm assuming you're seeing them in your soil. As long as you're not seeing any like molds and mildews or like slimy mushrooms, I mean, not like it's decomposing now it's slimy, but I mean, like this was the original and intentional state of this mushroom was to be slimy, then they're typically going to be pretty good. And I would say, just generally speaking, I would say it's not bad to see mushrooms popping up in your soil. I would say it's typically a good, especially if you have a diversity of them, it's typically a good indicator of somewhat decent soil. At least you have a fungal aspect to your soil. And I would say that's good considering most people, I mean, that's the most common thing that's missing in people's soils is the fungal aspect. And then the predators, because the proper prey aren't in place.
Yeah, but like William said, I mean, if you got mushrooms out there, that's usually a pretty good sign. You got things breaking down and things are going to be, remember, mushrooms they're not just the mouth of the forest. It's also the internet of the forest. And that's what a lot of people don't talk about. These mushrooms, I mean, think about this. This is how crazy, this is how wonderful the good Lord put things into action. Imagine you got a, let's say it's a bug that's going to kill oak trees, okay? And let's say you have an oak grove over there. And the trees on the edge, they already know that they're not going to make it, let's say. They will use the mycelial network to tell the other oaks back in that forest, hey, I ain't going to make it, fellas. But these are the antibodies you need to produce to protect yourself from what's coming. That happens. And they use the mycelial network to do all this communication. At least that's what we believe. So, I mean, anybody to think, I know there's a lot of opinions out there, but anybody that thinks that all of this just happened in and of itself, I mean, I guess you have more faith than me to think that all of this stuff just happened, but I truly believe the good Lord put it all into place because you can't have this level of connectivity between everything on this planet or on this earth. You can't have that without there being a creator. So, yeah, great question. I mean, way to kick things off. And by the way, folks, if you do have a question, if you would, put it in all capital letters so I can see it, so we can both see it. Yeah, it says, I have 20 different looking mushrooms. Okay, you probably got some kicking soil out there in a good way. Yeah. You know, son, of all the things you look for in life in most soils, what's the one that's hardest to find?
Fungi. Fungi is the hardest one fungi is the one that comes up the least common, I guess, whenever people send in soil samples and stuff. Everybody's lacking fungi, especially in their garden. Everybody's lacking fungi. So generally, as a blanket statement, you can typically assume, unless they've already done some remediation or they just started off in a really good spot, you can typically assume that they're going to need to introduce or increase the fungal content of their soils.
And that's why I love down in my food forest, y'all. Every time I go to town, I pick up maybe 30 or more buckets of aged wood chips and I put them out there. Man, we will have a kaleidoscope of different mushrooms coming up. This isn't my specialty, so I'm not going to go out there and eat them. But you name it, we got them coming up out of there, and that's always a great sign. And of course, they're breaking down that wood. They're doing all kinds of wonderful things. Well, look, folks, you take one step towards nature, you're going to get 10 of them back to you. Closed Circuit says, my chicken tractor on steroids is popping and locking. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. That's exactly what I want to hear. All right, so let's go into this. Micronic Silver, 10% off with promo code PERMA. I was using it every day, but you know, I find out that ever since I have that device out there, I was taking the nose spray. I basically do that every single day with my Chronic Silver. Haven't felt the need to do it as of late. Probably ought to do it when we leave the property though. So, 10% off with promo code PERMA. They got a lot of other things over there, that'll help you in so many different ways. If you want some ball and glasses like me and William got, check out Bond Charge, 15% off with promo code PERMA. And then everybody's asking about Soil Saviors. In fact, I think next program, maybe the one after that, we'll do a giveaway. We'll do some Soil Saviors. We'll give away a $400 box, a 5-acre box. And if you want some, link below. So let's get on to some of this good news. All right. So afternoon and evening walks may offer slightly greater blood pressure benefits, experts say. Okay, so I can go through this article, or I can tell you what Jack Cruz would tell you, is that when you see the morning and the evening sun without glasses, folks, I can't emphasize that enough, without glasses. If you can see morning and evening sun, it is going to benefit, and if you can wear as little clothes as possible, I mean, me and your mom, every morning out here, you know, depending on, because the sun rises so far away, the device I have isn't, you know, I'm still getting the chemtrail filtered sun, you know, but I got on as little clothes as possible and I'm standing here facing it and I'm reciting my Bible verses at that time. That's when I, you know, really go on my memorization thing while I'm doing it. And then also in the evening, if you can see it set, even better. So there you have it on that one. All right, here's another one. New research suggests vitamin C prevents brain decline in old age. Folks, be really, really mindful. I brought this up because I wanted to make you aware, and it was in a podcast. It may have been with Gary Brecka. I don't recall where. But folks, it knocked my socks off when I found this out, that if you're taking supplement vitamin C, nearly all of it, comes from China, and they can't verify whether or not this stuff is either vitamin C, and chances are, 99% of it is coming from GMO sources. So you want to be careful about that. I'm guessing nobody else is really talking about that. That's why if you're going to get vitamin C, that I would go to the Health Ranger, I'd go check out Mike Adams. I know they source theirs from England, but if you can do it even better, look, grow your own. If you can get it from a natural source that's local to you, that's always going to be the best. So consider that. That's why I wanted to bring that up. Vitamin C, I don't know that people have too much of a problem with that these days, but anyway, I thought that'd be important. Go ahead, son.
I don't think most people realize that vitamin C and stuff is coming from waste treatment plants. And like, yeah, you got to be careful with a lot of those supplements and where they're being sourced from because of where they're coming from.
Yeah, you have to be really, really cautious about that, especially when I've been doing a deep dive on vitamin C and where this stuff is sourced. Oh, man, forget a bunch of that, man. I am doing whatever I can to get the vitamin C I need through natural sources. I mean, it's that time of year also where, you know, if you, like, for example, William was talking about he's got a bushel of onions over there. We didn't grow any this year. I don't know why, but we didn't. Or we had, well, that's not entirely true. We had a few, and I ate them up already, but we didn't grow nowhere near enough. So I got to get them from the farmer's market. But even at the farmer's market, folks, you have got to be very, very cautious and know the people you're getting it from. Because what they would do in Kansas City at the river market, folks, get there early enough. Go to a major farmer's market and tell me if what I'm telling you is not true. They'll go out there. They'll have it looking all earthy. It'll be even some Amish looking folks. And look at where they're pulling those vegetables out of. They're pulling them out of a Del Monte box. Okay. You show me anybody here in the continental United States is growing tropical fruit. I mean, outside of Florida. I mean, but you're telling me in the middle of Kansas or Missouri, they're growing pineapples there. The Amish are? Are you kidding me? Folks, look closely because I'm telling you, if it's out of season, you got to start asking yourself, hold up a minute, because there are so many charlatans right there at the farmer's market as well. Good thing, really, really good thing about Asheville is that, yeah, some of these people may be absolutely crazy. They'll be the first in line to go get a jab, but they would not eat a GMO to save their lives, and they wouldn't sell one to somebody else either for the most part. So just be really, really cautious, even when you're getting it from the farmer's market. Speaking of which, this article kind of pops into it. aged garlic extract compound linked to improved muscle function in animal study. Early human signal found as well. So I've been eating with this whole tick nonsense going on. I think I mentioned in the last program that in the Army, when I was in jungle school, they told us to eat match heads. Well, I don't do that anymore, but you can get a whole lot of sulfur from garlic. And I picked up a bunch from the farmer's market last week. In fact, I think I cleaned the guy out. He said it just got done curing. And folks, you'll notice a massive difference from the store-bought garlic that you get even at the health food store compared to the stuff that you know it was freshly picked. And that's why, you know, this garlic is kind of timely for me to talk about this, is that you'll notice fresh garlic, if you haven't grown it yourself, y'all, you will find out that the stuff you have at your house, when you squeeze it or whatever, there is a ton of water content coming out of it. It is totally different. If you're using a garlic press, you'll notice that it seems like more water is coming out of this stuff than anything. That's how you know it's legit garlic. That stuff in that you're buying in a lot of these health food stores, it may be, quote, organic, but, you know, you got to be asking yourself how much life is actually in there. So, yeah, we didn't grow a whole lot of garlic this year, sadly. Man, that's another thing we slipped on, garlic and onions. So if that guy's there this time, I'm going to clean out what he's got also. But yeah, it was fantastic garlic. Just got finished curing. Very, very pungent. But yeah, I mean, it's good for, to say, to go down, we would have to do an entire hour-long show just talking about the benefits of garlic. But if you're worried about ticks or any other blood suckers out there that aren't relatives, you might want to think about eating large amounts of garlic like I'm doing. You can roast it. Kaolic garlic, that Japanese garlic, that's another way you want to make sure you're good on your source on that as well. I think you can buy that stuff fresh or fermented. Yeah, the Japanese garlic, I mean, I think it might be a little bit costly, but it's really, really good for you. So think about that stuff as well. And then also the added benefit, it's going to keep those ticks off of you. You were going to add something, son?
Yeah, the Kaolic garlic, is that a different variety of garlic, or is it a different way it's grown, or what's so special about that one?
Oh, it's basically a Japanese garlic that's been fermented. So you could do the very same thing at your house. You could absolutely ferment your own garlic, which, you know, I might get a bunch from this guy, Minta. I'm going to have to spend all day doing it. Because, folks, that's another thing you'll figure out. When you buy really, really good garlic or when you grow it, the paper on that garlic doesn't come off easy at all. You're going to have to work for that. I mean, you can crush it with your knife the whole nine yards, but still it is very tightly packed in there. So it's a lot more difficult to deal with. But yeah, you could take a bunch of garlic, stick it in a jar, and I'm sure you could ferment your own and probably just turn it into a superpower. So yeah, so basically it's a Japanese garlic. Those two doctors I had on a while back, they both suggested that I eat it, and I've been going like crazy. I kind of dropped the ball the last couple of days, but I got to get back on it. What I would do for a while there is take a bunch of garlic, break it down into cloves, and then go roast it a while, you know, maybe 400 degrees for about 35 to 40 minutes. Take it out, and then I would kind of, it's not as pungent, but then again, you're not getting as much allicin out of it either. So if you can crush it, let it sit for about 15 minutes and then eat it, that's going to be the best way to go. All right, so let's go into my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, if we take up arms, we've already lost. On the last tip of the day, I said we all must decide where we want to stand our ground and fight, because there is no avoiding it. But I didn't say how we must fight. As satisfying as it would be to blow these chemtrailing psychos out of the sky, you'd almost certainly invite a drone strike on your entire neighborhood. Don't fool yourself into thinking these demons won't drop bombs on Americans if it serves their agendas. They've been murdering women and children all around the globe without batting an eye. The entire planet will become Gaza if we let it. But we must fight strategically while we still can. Bill Mollison was a master strategist. Permaculture is truly a revolution disguised as gardening, but only if we take action. Tag from LifeGun 3 has the blueprint. The federal and most state politics are a lost cause. We need to take over every town, city, and county level boards and councils we can. And they are already trying to take that out of our hands with these data centers. There is no sitting on the sidelines anymore. Start meeting with your neighbors. Form a community group or mutual assistance group. Get on the board of the HOA. If we don't create the world we want, Someone else will do it for us. None of us want to be politicians, but that is exactly why we must be. As the permaculture pimp so often quotes J.R.R. Tolkien, the most improper job of any man, even saint, who at any rate, or at least unwilling to take it on, is bossing other men. Not one in a million is fit for it, and least of all those who seek the opportunity. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. If you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of this pimpcast, a remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group in the Sacramento area, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there. Boy, he said it all. You know, I'm not at all interested in an armed rebellion. Not at all. I would love to have an intellectual one, but you know, whether or not the powers that shouldn't be are going to push this thing to the point where, look, I said it before, long story short, there is no way on earth anybody's ever going to pick up arms. Nobody's ever going to do anything as long as they have food, entertainment, and a reasonable expectation of security, even if they're barely making it. That's what they lost in the French Revolution. That's what they forgot about. They forgot to feed the people. And what happens? You get a revolution, and whether or not it comes out like the American Revolution is touch and go. So keep that in mind. And Eric's also right in so many different ways. I mean, that Tolkien quote is probably one of my favorite quotes of all time. You know, the most improper job of any man, I'll loosely quote it, but the most improper job of any man is bossing other men. Not one in a million is fit for it, and least of all those that seek the opportunity. And I think that says it all. No matter, I mean, folks, how many of you in the sound of my voice right now, you worked with a person, a guy or a girl or whatever, the second they put them in charge, what happened? They turned into a maniac, a psychopath. And that's just with just a little bit of power. What do you think the power of a presidency or, you know, whatever the top leadership position may be in another country, what do you think that does to person? Think also, there was the guy before Vladimir Putin. I can't think of his name. It wasn't Gorbachev. It was the guy after Boris Yeltsin. I couldn't even believe that he actually wrote this, but he said the most intoxicating thing for most world leaders, and this is a guy that spoke to many of them, was knowing that you could take another grown man and send him to his death on your word. Now, it could have been misquoted. It could have been misaligned. But honestly, only a psychopath would ever think that. And honestly, we got no shortage of them right now. So like Eric says, let's not, there's another Kennedy quote I like. I need to memorize it. Where those that make peaceful resistance impossible make armed resistance inevitable or something like that. Anyway, we don't want to get to that. But yeah, folks, we got to stand up, stay alert, stay alive. You know the deal. All right, so let's jump right into it. Son, you were going to say something?
Yeah, we're about to get flagged. We're about to get monitored. We're about to get all these things. These people are like, man, these pimps are over here plotting something.
Oh, no. I hope not. I mean, I'm absolutely not. I mean, like Eric says, I mean, at the end of the day, you take, you know, you go out there, you go do something to this person. First of all, it's immoral. I wouldn't do that. I'm all about, let me just state this since you brought that up, because somebody might think, look, I adhere to the non-aggression principle, meaning don't start no SH and there won't be no IT. I will not initiate the violence, but if you want to bring it, I will do everything to talk you down. I will do everything I can to avoid it. But if it gets to the point where there is no avoiding it, then, you know, I'll take action. But like I said, non-aggression doesn't mean non-violent. There is a difference. Non-violent people are going to be like the Martin Luther King types, where no matter what happens, you don't respond. That's not me. If you endanger myself or my family, my life, or anything like that, well, I'm going to respond to protect myself. And I think any reasonable person would do the same thing. But there is a movement out there of people, guys in particular, that are like, oh, well, you know, I met three of them in my life that were like, no, even I'm like, okay, dude, if your wife was being raped and you had a weapon, what would you do? And this guy, I won't say his name. He lived in, there were actually two of them that actually I've known four of them. Two of them lived in Kansas and said, well, you know, well, I'm like, the fact that you even got to think about that tells me that I probably ought to part ways. So anyway, yeah, I've actually, I've met a couple of guys like that. Outside of that, they were great guys, but man, if that's the way you roll, bro, I know, you know, if we were walking down the street and I get, somebody takes a pipe to my head and yeah, I know you're not going to do anything to help me. So,
you know. Yeah, we're past the point of talking them down. He already done hit me with the pipe.
Yeah. I mean, what are we going to do now? I mean, yeah, there's no reasoning to a person like that. All right, y'all, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. You got a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world, but like William mentioned earlier, they got storms coming through. The most, look, an EMP is possible, but the biggest thing that's probable is definitely a storm. If anything gets past this EMP shield and Kentucky Fries anything in your house, they're going to cover you for 25 G's. Find me another product out there that will make that same guarantee. You talk about an ironclad guarantee. EMP shield, y'all, I've been putting in transient voltage surge suppressors for almost 30 years, and I can tell you right now, there ain't a better one on the market. That's why me, as a journeyman electrician, for almost 30 years, can tell you that's what I roll with. EMPShield.com, $50 off with promo code PERMA. All right, let's get into the PERMA of this show. Okay, the title of it is The Most Overlooked Food Force Layer. I didn't tell William what it was. He didn't tell me what he thought it was. We do that on purpose. Wow, man, if I wasn't already into this show, man. Somebody's talking about Mark Passio. Yeah, I'm a big fan of his work. Okay, I'm not going to get sideways. I'm not going to get sidetracked. You had to go and do it. So it's like a Scooby snack to me when you talk about this stuff. But anyway, most overlooked part in a food force layer. Now, I didn't tell him what I thought it was. He didn't tell me what he thought it was. And I told him to come up with a list of, you know, five things on his end. I would do the same. And I'm wondering if we both picked the same layer.
Okay. So, I think, oh, here's what happened on my end. I was like, all right, I think I know which one Dad's going to pick. And so I picked what was second on my list. And then I was thinking, well, he might be doing the same thing. So I'll go back with the original one. And so I'm thinking now I don't know. I don't know if we did the same one or not.
Okay, I'll look, y'all, there are seven layers of a forest. For those that don't know, those that are tuning in, you got an overstory, which are your big trees, your understory, your smaller trees, you got your shrub layer, you got your vine, you got your roots, you got your ground cover, and you have your herbaceous layer. That's seven. I would say there's eight when you consider the mycelium. Now, when you're in places like tropics, you're going to have more, but we're going to talk about temperate environments. And so of those layers, we always, if you always think about it, son, most videos about food forests, what do they always talk about? They always talk about the overstory or the understory and maybe the shrubs. Nobody ever talks about the other things. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I might want to talk about some videos. I might want to put out some videos of, because there's so much food you're missing out on, folks, if you're not doing it. So I'll go ahead and tell you the one I selected, son, and that is going to be the ground cover.
Cool. We're good. That was my number two, though. I almost did that. I almost did the ground cover. Okay, I picked mushrooms, the fungal layer, which technically isn't the seven, isn't part of the official seven layers of a food forest. But like Dad was saying, you don't have a forest without the mycelial layer, so it's part of the, one of the layers. So, but I was going back and forth between. So my number one was mycelial layer, and the reason I said that it's one of the most overlooked is because people don't. A lot of people just don't get that far. Once they get to the point where they can start, once they have started casting enough shade on the soil, most people are busy doing other aspects with their homestead or their farm or whatever it may be, and they don't get to the mushroom part or the fungal part. So that's why I was saying it was the most overlooked. Ground cover was number two for me, because in some settings, either people just leave grass in their food forest or their orchard, or they just cover everything in wood chips and call it good, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just there's a whole nother layer that it's going to serve the same function as the wood chips, that's going to produce like an edible food at the same time, or an edible yield at the same time. So I went with mushrooms.
I mean, if you want just grass out there, folks, there's nothing wrong with that. You can absolutely do it. I'm not a big fan, depending on the environment. It depends entirely on where I'm putting this thing. But if you have a food forest that has a bunch of wood chips out there, I'm going to give you my first one right off the bat. Folks, you can't lose with strawberries. I mean, produce fruit and all kinds of runners. It's going to suppress a lot of the weeds out there, especially if, and that's where you got to have a good fungal layer down there. You don't have to, but it only helps. Man, we had in our food forest out there, we got 100 gallons of strawberries, y'all. My grandbaby's probably still eating them. So yeah, we freeze dried a bunch of them, gave some to the ice cream store. We did a whole bunch out there. And like William said, it thrives beneath trees, you know, and it's going to be one of those things. It's going to be a brightness, a sweetness that's coming up at a time when everything else is still catching up. So strawberries, oh my goodness, if we didn't harvest a bunch of comfrey out of there, we would have strawberries coming out of our eyeballs. So that's one of the problems we've also had is that, yeah, strawberries are great. They were doing great. And then, you know, because we had to meet orders and stuff like that, we kind of destroyed a lot of their habitat down there. So anyway, we're getting back on top of that again. But my number one right off the bat for edible ground cover, and it doesn't have to be edible necessarily to you, but it just needs to be a ground cover. All right, that's my number one.
My number one, I guess, mushroom would be the oyster mushrooms. The reason I put that number one is because it's very, very fast growing. Of the mushroom varieties, it's going to be the ones that, like, as soon as you set it up, you're going to get a pretty quick return from it. Now, I've seen there's a bunch of different ways to grow these oyster mushrooms. The most typical way is doing, like, the sawdust bag where you sterilize a, like, 5-pound bag or 25-pound bag of sawdust, and then you inoculate it with your oyster mushroom spawn, and then you just wait. That's going to be the most popular way, but you can also inoculate that same sawdust and put it into your food forest, into your mulch systems, into your wood chips, things like that if you want to. You're going to have a lower yield, but you're going to have a higher yield because it's way more passive than having to build a whole infrastructure box or a place to put those sawdust bags. Granted, it's still worth doing it if that's what you want to do and get heavier into mushroom production. But as far as your food forest goes or your orchard goes, you can inoculate the wood chips and the mulch and the sawdust that you're using in your food forest as a carbon input.
My next one's going to be, I'm going to say creeping thyme. Now, every single morning when Michelle and I go out and do the chores, every single morning as of late, I go out there, I pick a bunch of currants because that's what's ripe right now. Going to have some berries coming up here, raspberries and blackberries here before long. I see them coming along. But right now, I pick a bunch of currants, and every morning I eat a salad. And I source a lot of most of what's in there right here on the farm. So I get those currants. I also get rosemary, thyme, and oregano right there from the orchard. I mean, it's just right there off the road. Just put it in a bowl, take it up with me, and then I'll take part of it, and I put it in the bone broth that Michelle and I drink every single day. And I'll take the other part of it and I put it in my salad. But the cool thing about creeping thyme, because, you know, regular thyme, at least the one we got out there, I mean, you could almost call some of what I'm going to be talking about herbaceous layer, or it could be considered in the herbaceous layer. But creeping thyme, man, you're going to have, it's a pollinator magnet, it's drought tolerant, and edible and medicinal, because I'm, like I said, I'm talking about rosemary, thyme, and oregano, and I can go on and on about what you can do. I mean, you got a sick chicken, what do? You give them rosemary. It's like the universal cure for a chicken. But if you got one, you might want to think about putting them in a freezer anyway. But anyway, creeping thyme is going to be my first one, my second one.
My second one is going to be wine cap mushrooms or King Strophoria, which apparently is the same mushroom. That's the issue with common names, is that like one plant will have like five, or one mushroom will have like five different common names, or there will be shared common names. So like, you know, something like wine cap here could be something completely different just one state away. But anyway, wine cap, you can integrate this into your food forest or your orchard by inoculating the wood chips beforehand and then applying them to the surfaces. So you can inoculate your like walking paths if you wanted to. You could inoculate your mulch rings around the specific tree if you wanted to. Wherever you want it to put hardwood chips, it's going to grow wine cap mushrooms. So just inoculate them first and then put them where you want them, and then you're good to go. And then that's going to last a little bit. The thing with the oysters is that you're going to have to re-inoculate more often. Wine caps, you get a little bit longer of a harvest off of them, like 2 to 3 years off the wood chips than you would the compared to the oysters. But with the wine caps, it's going to take a little bit longer before you get to a harvest. So just keep those things in mind.
Yeah, my next one's going to be, you know, I wouldn't be the permaculture pimp daddy if I didn't talk about some kind of nitrogen fixer down there in the ground cover. And I don't mean all of it. I mean just part of it. And I'm going to talk about some clover. You know, it could be red, white, whatever clover does well for you. You want some of that out there because it's going to help to fix nitrogen down there. Plus, you don't want just one thing. Yeah, I'm talking about strawberries and creeping thyme, but all of them can be there. They can all exist in exactly the same place. I mean, that's exactly what you see in nature. There should never be a monocrop of anything because you never see it. That's the fastest way to invite disease in there. Like Jeff Lawton always says, you want to keep the insects confused. You want so much diversity in there that they're like, okay, man, I don't know what to do. I mean, it's a little more complicated than that, but you get the point. Then also, if you're going to be running livestock through there, well, that's a forage for them. And it's always going to improve soil structure no matter what. So think about the nitrogen fixer, no matter the layer. I mean, the overstory now at the mycelial layer, I don't know that you have a nitrogen fixing version for that, but in every other layer you do, from the overstory all the way down to the ground cover, every single layer, in my view, should have nitrogen fixers at least every third tree, if that's what you're doing. If I'm putting four bushes around a tree, two of those are going to be, let's say, blueberries, but the other two might be a nitrogen fixing shrub. So you want to be thinking about that in every single layer.
My number three is going to be three different names, same mushroom, just depends on when you harvest it. Button, cremini, or portobello. Now, keep in mind with this mushroom, it's going to take a little bit more effort to make propagation beds or make, I guess, like spawn beds. It requires a little bit more. You have to use chicken manure and I think it's horse manure and chicken manure. You have to then like age it. Then you have to sterilize it. And then you got to cover it, like put it in place. And then you got to cover it in like sterilized peat moss and stuff like that. So it requires a little bit more. But the benefit of it is that it's going to be something that's easily recognizable to people that you might sell to. So like restaurants or farmers markets or whatever it may be, people are more likely to buy those types of mushrooms versus some of the more exotic or different looking mushrooms that they're not as used to seeing in the grocery store. You can go to any grocery store in the United States and you'll see some variety of portobello, cremini, what was the other one? Button mushroom. Those are the typical white ones that you see in the blue canister or the blue little box in the produce section. Same thing. They're going to require more effort, but they're going to be easier to sell to an uneducated audience on mushrooms, I guess. So like Asheville, you can sell whatever mushroom you want to, and it's going to sell. There are businesses that exist in Asheville only because they are in Asheville. If they were in any other place, they would completely flop and fail. But if you live in a food city like that, then you can get away with some more diverse mushrooms. Where I live, I got to convince people to just even eat mushrooms. So there's that.
No, one guy at, I want to call it Black Trumpet Mushroom place here in Asheville. They were wiped out with that manufactured hurricane that came through. I go there at least, I think, once a week or once every couple of weeks. And that's another thing. I'm glad you brought that up, son. I mean, I think that's a really good topic. So here's another little medicinal thing that I do with my breakfast. So in addition to that salad, I always eat maybe a couple of eggs. And I also, when I'm making these eggs, I mean, anybody that knows me knows I'm a Nazi about how I cook my eggs. And okay. William's shaking his head back there. I don't play. They have got to be cooked perfectly. I don't like no slimy, sloppy eggs.
Yeah, no, that is dad. That whoever that, what's that guy's name? Jethro something? He's like, yeah. I held a butcher knife to this woman's neck. So I don't like no slimy, sloppy eggs.
Yeah. I can't remember that guy's name, but yeah. He's no, okay, I'm not that bad, but no. If I go to a place and they cook some eggs jacked up, man. I know that sounds weird. I'm something, I guess, of a food snob, but I know how to cook eggs perfectly. And when I go to a place and I know that they just, first of all, if they're powdered eggs or that stuff in a box, man, get that out of here. I'm not even going to mess with it. One thing they like to do in Asheville is they like to make these quiches or whatever else. I'm not a big fan of those either. Anyway, every time I cook my eggs, one thing I do, and here's another little added benefit of what William was talking about before I get into my next one, is I buy mushrooms from that place, and I'll buy a mushroom I've never had before. Every week I'll try a different mushroom or whatever. So I take that mushroom back, saute it. And according to Paul Stamets, you don't want to eat any mushrooms raw, if I remember him correctly. Yeah. So I'll take these mushrooms and I'll chop them up. I think the last batch, it may have been turkey tail. I don't remember what it was. Anyway, I'll chop it up and I'll take some onions, saute that in a pan. And then, you know, whenever I make an omelet or whatever, that's exactly what I'll put in the middle of there, along with some local cheese, which we got from Steve, the blacksmith. Not his wife hooked us up the other day. Put some of that local cheese in there. Got eggs. I mean, man, you got yourself a meal right there. But anyway, that's where another good way where I take those local mushrooms that were produced locally, and then I consume them every single day, at least for breakfast. All right, my next one on the list is going to be, and I kind of spoke about it a moment ago, but folks, I'm a big believer of it. Oregano. I can't even tell you how many health practitioners, natural health practitioners out there talk about the benefits of oregano oil. Well, what do you think I'm getting? I told you every morning I pick rosemary, thyme, and oregano. Every single morning. I even take the stems of the oregano when I'm sitting there cooking that bone broth, or at least heating it up on the stove. I take the stems, I took all the leaves off, and I chopped them up along with the rosemary and the thyme. And I take the stems and I put them in that bone broth when I'm, you know, boiling it. And I'm getting all the essential oils out of all that stuff. So that's another awesome ground cover that you can put out there. Technically, would that be in the herbaceous layer? I don't know, but the oregano that I'm getting right now is basically a ground cover. So it spreads rapidly. I mean, that's a good thing. It attracts beneficial insects, just like all the others out there. And it produces an abundant biomass. So, I mean, this thing is, it's really kind of hard for something to break through there. So every single morning, but also it's a medicinal thing. It's not just, you don't necessarily need things that always stick to your ribs. You want things that are going to, you know, have a medicinal quality, and things that maybe you don't like them straight up, but you put them in a salad, man, you'd be shocked at what I put in the salad sometimes, because I can hide it in the salad dressing if it's bitter, or if it's a bitter green or something like that, that maybe doesn't taste great by itself. Well, you know, with the kind of dressing I put on there, if it's homemade or if I got it from Bragg's vinegar or whatever the case may be, it could be one of those, and you can really hide some bitter stuff in there that's really, really, really good for you. So that's my next one.
Yeah, speaking of oregano, the baby's been chewing on oregano like crazy lately. I just realized how many things she goes and forages out in the yard. She, in the front yard, she's getting the mint. She's getting the menthol. We got a mint garden just for her, a bunch of different types of mint. We got chocolate mint. We got regular mint. We got mountain mint. We got apple mint. Didn't even know they had an apple mint. We got a menthol one. The menthol is her favorite one because I think it's the strongest mint flavor. And then in the backyard in Emily's little herb garden, she's out there eating nasturtium. She's eating oregano leaves by themselves, which I was watching her because I was waiting for her reaction after she put an oregano leaf in there. And she's just chomping away at it saying, spicy. Like, that one was spicy. I'm like, yeah, I bet. And then she's eating moringa leaves every day and strawberries and pulling tomatoes off and all that type of stuff. She's doing all kinds of foraging out there. The next one on my list, though, is lion's mane. Now, this one is going to be like your highest. This is what you're going to make the most money off of, if I had to guess, just because I don't know how quickly you can produce lion's mane, like over and over and over again, or how many times one bag will produce a fruiting body over and over again. But you can charge the highest amount for this. And there's two different categories of selling lion's mane. There's the culinary lion's mane, and then there's the medicinal lion's mane that you could get into if you wanted to. Up to you. Either way, lion's mane is something that you can introduce as well. And you're going to grow it similarly as you would oysters. Oyster mushrooms in the spawn sawdust bag. Now, that being said, I would assume you can inoculate logs with lion's mane as well, considering that's where you're going to find it in nature. Like in nature, if you're walking through a forest and you ever see like a white beard coming off of a tree, that's typically going to be lion's mane. It kind of looks similar to lion's mane. Now, what's really cool about like the culinary aspect of lion's mane is that if you slice it up into like half inch slices and then you fry it in a pan with butter, it tastes like lobster. which is pretty cool from mushroom. So if anybody of your, any of your friends have like shellfish allergies or something like that, you can offer that as an alternative if you wanted to. But yeah, lion's mane. Now, as far as putting these together, this is how I would recommend you put them together in an orchard or a food forest or whatever it may be. Oysters, you're going to inoculate like sawdust, and you're looking, you're using that for quick mushroom harvest. Like you're planning on harvesting these things pretty quickly in the form of sawdust, or the substrate being sawdust, and then you apply that around mulchings of the tree, whatever you want to do, or in sawdust bags if you wanted to. And then wine caps, those you're going to use to inoculate your wood chip paths or your mulchings around the tree, and that's going to be of a longer term wait for the fruiting body, but also longer term production, like it's going to produce a lot longer. And then shiitake, which is going to take even longer for you to get to a harvest point, but it's going to produce far longer than anything else that I had written down here. Now the last two, get the first three squared away first before getting into the last two, because the last two are going to be a little bit more complicated. You're going to learn skills on the first three that you can apply to your last two. And the first three take a little bit less effort and time that you subtract from the yield. So yeah, that's how I'd put it all together. What are your thoughts, Dad?
Yeah, I think that's a really good strategy. I guess you ran out of your list, but I got one more to go. Anyway,
I did five. Yeah, I did oyster, wine cap, shiitake, button, cremini, portobello, and lion's mane.
Yeah, but I think you jumped the gun because I got one more to go and I let it off. So it's all good. Anyway, that's cool if you did that. Fight Your Naked says cherry, strawberry, comfrey, dill, claydim. What? Not sure of the question, but I thank you for the super chat. Yeah, and somebody else had another question earlier. Man, there's some really good questions. Oh, and by the way, folks, we're really trying to switch over to a new platform where we can take calls, make this more of a call-in show, because, man, we got some really great advice. We got some really great comments in here. Love to be able to get y'all on the podcast. All right, so my last one's going to be creeping raspberry. It's tough. It's productive. Dense soil coverage. It could get out of control, kind of like your strawberries, but, I mean, is that necessarily a problem? It's going to produce small edible fruits. It's another little feather you can add into the cap and then find out whether or not it works for you. But there's so many other things out there that you could look at a ground cover. So like I said, either it's going to feed you, it's going to feed the animal, maybe it feeds the wildlife, or maybe it's a medicinal. So I try to throw a little bit of everything in there, including the nitrogen fixer. So I hope that was a blessing to you. And then with that said, we got a question here. Has your new device had an effect on precipitation? I don't know, but the claims are is that you get stuff that is more akin to natural precipitation. And then if it's engineered, it helps to buffer whatever they did. So far, we haven't had anything that has been like really, really out of whack. They've been spraying like crazy here. In fact, I'm curious of how many of you out there are still being covered up. I mean, every time I turn around, everybody, at least... I don't spend as much time on X as I did before. I try to spend as little as possible. They change the settings, and now I get everybody but the people I actually subscribe to. And, you know, it just seems like I think people are just getting sick and tired of even saying anything about it. They're thinking they have no options. The government doesn't care. I mean, yeah, you know, you're going to stop dropping bombs over there in the Middle East, allegedly. How about the bombs that you're dropping in terms of poison? You know, when I smell diesel for no reason, when, you know, they fly over the sky, I'm smelling exhaust and diesel. I'm like, where is this coming from? I live in the middle of nowhere. How is that even happening? But anyway, the device clearly seems to be making some serious improvements out there. And it's calling in wildlife. I'm starting to think they think, okay, let's go to the epicenter of wherever this stuff is happening. And, you know, I guess they found it. So,
Well, on that note, Dad, it didn't start raining where you were until you guys got that device. You guys were in a severe drought until you guys got that device. Now, it could be coincidence, but I don't know. It really didn't. You guys really didn't get much rain until, I mean, you guys are what, like 7 inches low for the year or something like that, which is a lot.
It was you guys. Yeah, it was definitely low. We live in a temperate rainforest, so we should be getting rain. But the games that they're playing these days, yeah, they're going to call it a La Nina, El Nino, whatever the case. Sounds like something you would order at a Mexican restaurant. But the bottom line is they are doing things, and to the degree that, like you were telling me a moment ago, in a certain place you run, that almost nobody is aware of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay. No, no, no. Man, I think this is important. The only person who's aware of it and or cares about it is a 17-year-old. He's the only one. And now this location that Dad is talking about, there's a 17-year-old, a couple 20-year-olds, a couple 30-year-olds, a couple 40, and then a couple 50-year-olds. So there's a kaleidoscope of like age differences there, or generations. And the only one that even kind of cares is the 17-year-old, which I think is pretty telling.
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy place we're living right now. Well, folks, hopefully this list of things will give you ideas. And also, when you're setting up your orchard and your food forest, remember there are seven layers for a reason. It's going to make your life a whole lot simpler if you figure, look, if all you want in that ground cover is grass, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Now you got to ask yourself, okay, am I going to mow this? Am I going to use animals? I always prefer to use animals. I'm not mowing anything if I can help it. And let them do all the work for you. You know, and then even I was talking to your mom, actually, look, there's this part of the orchard. And I was like, hey, you think we ought to let them in there? She's like, no, I got comfrey planted over by that edge of the fence. I don't want it messed with. So, I mean, there are going to be times where it makes sense to bring in your animals. At the end of the season, no matter what, I always bring them in there. And I want them to eat up things, and they're going to disrupt things in a good way. They might even destroy a few things, but for the most part, it's nothing I can't handle in 10 minutes. So think about all those things and think about those different layers. Remember, there's more than just the overstory, the understory, and the shrub layer. And most people kind of jump off after that. You can pretty much grow everything you need around one tree. No, I can't say everything you need, but you can grow a lot of what you need around one tree using it as a guild, what we call in permaculture a guild, meaning that it's not just one thing. You want a nitrogen fixer and something edible at every single layer, and you're probably going to love what comes out of it. All right, son, anything else to add?
Yeah, to answer your question earlier, I'll fight you naked. What he's asking is cherry, strawberry, comfrey, dill, clade, plus what? Like, he's meaning, like, what else should he add to the guild? I would say rosemary and garlic are never bad things to add to your guild. Both very low maintenance, rosemary being drought tolerant, and everything on the property is going to benefit from both rosemary and garlic.
Absolutely. That's right on with that. All right, y'all. Hopefully that was all a blessing to you. I want to thank everybody for checking us out live. And don't forget, till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
From the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life for the magic of life. Tune it to the beat, feel the vibe and thrive.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.